ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bluntstock podcast with Tim Rowe and Charmaine Bukovec.
On episode 15 of the Business of Bluntstock podcast, myself, Justin Darcy, and co-host Tim Rowe chat with Bluntstock agent Johnny McKeever as he talks about his history in the game as well as the life of a dual hemisphere Bluntstock agent.
It's time again for another ANZ Bluntstock News Business of Bluntstock podcast. And we're delighted to have an agent from both, you know, works both hemispheres, works extremely hard, knowledgeable, commands a lot of respect from a lot of different people. Johnny McKeever, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for that very kind introduction. I don't know how much respect I really command, but it's nice of you to say so.
Well, I'm sure you definitely do, because I've tried to do a little bit of research and they all said you've got, an agent that's just got something that can see things in horses that other people can't see. And that's what we're going to try and get out of you today, what it in fact is you can see in horses that others can't.
Well, you quiz me, because I'm not sure about that. I think probably one thing is I've been doing it for 35 years. So I suppose over 35 years of spending a lot of time analysing young stocks, you do probably pick up and learn bits and bobs. You might not even really know that you're doing it, but it sort of happens, and it's probably quite hard to explain, but you just get gut feelings about things.
But you didn't fall into this job by accident. You were sort of born into the bloodstock business. You correct me if I'm wrong, but your father was a renowned bloodstock agent as well.
Yeah, that's true. I was born and brought up in Ireland at the Curragh. My dad, Peter McKeever, was the managing director of one of those big functioning agencies that were what was in place at the time. It was called the Curragh Bloodstock Agency. It was the sort of Irish counterpart to what was the world famous British Bloodstock Agency, which was based in London and Newmarket at the time. And those agencies, like lots of different agents, worked under that one umbrella. And, for foreign people in the 50s, 60s, 70s, when we say foreign, we mean people outside the islands of England and Ireland. When Americans or Australians or New Zealanders or Hong Kong people or whatever looked for horses, they always went directly to those big agencies and would be assigned that maybe a senior agent or a junior agent, depending on the type of horse that they were looking for. And yeah, so it was the tail end of that time. Those agencies were getting too top heavy and too sort of unruly and too expensive to run, and things would change. And over in the 90s and 2000s, it became more the norm for agents to become individual people who worked, or maybe a small group of people who worked together, but not a great monolithic style bloodstock agency like there had been in the post-war years.
There probably is still a couple of those sort of smaller agencies. BBA Ireland sort of springs to mind, and a couple of others in the UK, but you're right, it's very rare down in Southern Hemisphere for agents to sort of run under the one umbrella.
Yeah, the BBA Ireland is the big survivor. It sort of has morphed out of the remains of the BBA England, which was disbanded, and the Curragh Bloodstock, which actually had a sort of management buyout by the BBA Ireland. But they were all very convoluted times. And the norm now in the UK is for one or two people to be working together, or one on their own. That's kind of overall the norm. Blandford Bloodstock, maybe three people, Stewie Bowman, Tom Goff, and Richard Brown. They're a great team. They'd be a very major force on the European circuit. But most people are working on their own. I worked in partnership with a wonderful guy called Oliver St. Lawrence for about 12 years, from about 1995 until 2005 or 2006. And then he went off to do a job for a major Arab client and left me on my own, and I've never really joined up with anyone since.
It takes a very dedicated person to be able to work dual hemisphere as well. Would you be able to tell us how you manage that lifestyle of being able to cover the Southern Hemisphere and then go back home as well and and cover those sales as well. It's essentially a 12-month cycle.
Yeah, it's been a marvelous thing, and Susie and I are terribly grateful that Australia has entered itself onto our lives, because we've had so much fun and job satisfaction out of being able to work out of here in your summer and our winter months. It all stemmed back to a wonderful lady who lots of people know called Kay Waterhouse. She was having dinner with friends of mine, and I was invited, and she asked me why I hadn't been to Australia. And I said, actually, I have, Gay, but I went there in 1990 on my honeymoon with Susie, and I haven't found the time to go back since. And that was about 15 years ago. And she said, well, you've got to come down. And if you come down, I'll show you the ropes, and you can look around a few horses and tell me what you think. And so forth. And she gave me a little commission at the Magic Million sale about 17 or 18 years ago. And that was the start of it. I came down. Very much. I had some other great mutual friends, the Mitchell family from Yarraman Park, Stud, who had looked after and hosted Susie and I on the honeymoon in 1990. Between the Mitchells and the Waterhouses, we got a great welcome, and they put us in touch with people. And since then, things have developed, and it's moved on and on. And how lucky are we? Very, very lucky. Happy people.
In this game, people are loyal when you're buying fast horses, but if there's a few slow ones, people can jump ship pretty quickly. But with Gay, I think you had a bit of early success. So is that right?
Yeah. What happened with Gay was, I couldn't be a lot of help to her overall. She was just wonderful to introduce me to Australia, but she then started saying, look, we want some stayers. And it was decided that I would help find those stayers for her stable. And a very young Bruce Slade, pre-Adrian Bott, Bruce Slade came to Newmarket, stayed with us for a horses in training sale, and he went home with four horses that we bought. Two of them turned out to be subsequent really good horses, Glencadam Gold and Julianas. A couple of years later, we bought a horse called Offer, who in Australia became known as The Offer, and became probably my best staying purchase for Australia at that time. He won the Sydney Cup when he was known as The Offer. And he ran in the Melbourne Cup and did all the things that make owners happy. And since that time, Gay and Adrian subsequently came on several occasions to England. We became great mates. And I've been supplying them with, I have been doing the searching. Obviously, I don't take all the credit for that on my own, because Robbie Waterhouse is the most amazing form guru, and it's a committee, really. Robbie studied the form. I look at the horses, and then normally either Claudia or Adrian or Bruce Slade come to the sales, and we all decide what type of horse we like. And we've had some very good purchases, the most recent of which I think is probably Just Fine, who won the Metropolitan.
Yeah, he's a very nice young stayer, and I'm sure he'll go places over the next 12 months. In fact, we actually, speaking of Bruce Slade, he was on our previous episode of The Business of Bloodstock, and he was sort of talking afterwards saying you were next up, and he referred to those times going to Newmarket and looking at horses in the morning and needing to be refreshed in the afternoon, make sure you go to the bar and have a champagne and a glass of wine.
One of the really important things in this game is to make sure that you're enjoying it. And my way of enjoying it is normally to have a beer or a glass of wine after the sales analysis is complete. It's a fairly old-fashioned attitude these days, that's the way I operate. And I don't think anyone's ever going to change me.
We wouldn't want to either, Johnny. You mentioned Gay Waterhouse, of course, but you've, during this subsequent 15, 18 years, you've built up a nice Southern Hemisphere client base. I know you buy a few two-year-olds for different clients, or yearlings to pinhook through the two-year-old sales, Eon Kemp for one at Kilgraven Lodge in New Zealand.
When Archie Alexander started training, he didn't have an in-house agent that he has now, so I used to do a bit of work for Archie. and then Matt Kumani, the family, I know them from England, and he gave me a few gigs to do, and probably my most recent, linking the two hemispheres is an incredibly old and special friend of mine called Nick Sutton contacted me about 10 years ago and said his son wanted to go and learn the ropes about training in Australia, and I sorted him out to some extent. He got sorted out and he ended up being assistant to Troy Causton's, and he's a young man called Dom Sutton. And in a nice little bit of symmetry, a horse that I had bought at the New Zealand Breeze Up sales with Dom in a slightly indirect way. I wasn't actually in the ring when it was bought, but we did the groundwork after the Melbourne Cup this year, and then Dom went over and bought, was consigned by Ian Kemp on behalf of Sir Peter Vella, who's another friend that I see from him up in the Northern Hemisphere a lot. And so it was nice buying off someone that I do a lot of work for a new guy that I'm doing a lot of work for, and the horse won at Pakenham. And he's a super set horse called Ferose, and he won at Pakenham last Thursday night, I think, as I was driving up to the Hunter Valley. And it was just, it was wonderful. You know, it was a really special moment. The son of a great friend of mine starting his career, having his first winner with a horse bought through me off people that I know and admire. It was just that sort of thing is very special, and money can't buy that, you know.
And being able to experience those things, and as you say, you've been in the game for a long time, and that there's a lot you've achieved. But seeing things like that, and seeing the next generation that you've been involved with since they were the young fellas coming through, and seeing them whether it's have their first winner or whether it's they buy their first winner and you're working alongside them, those are the things I could imagine that you cherish now as well.
Yeah, really, very much so. Part of what I love doing is a lot of young people, I've had a lot of young people apply to jobs over the years because they want to work the sales. And it's always very handy for a sole bloodstock agent. Susie and I work on our own to have an extra pair of hands at the sale. So over the years, I've had a lot of young men and ladies, some of them through the Dali Flying Star, some of them through contacts, a particular guy called James Ferguson, Bell River Thoroughbreds, who came actually and worked for me for a couple of years in Newmarket, and then did a couple of years sort of co-agencing with me before he set up his new family farm. These are all bonds with Australia, and I'm very, very keen on working with young people. It gives me a huge kick to help people get going. So I'm always sort of on the lookout for people who want that 6 month sales experience or a bit of sales experience in the Northern Hemisphere or Southern Hemisphere. I really enjoy it, and it keeps me in touch with the younger world and what's going on there, because they're the future, and you know, we've got to nurture that.
And being to operate dual hemisphere as well, when attending these sales and you're looking at yearlings, obviously you're looking at two different types of horses over in the Northern Hemisphere. Are you trying to find that classics type winner? And over here, assuming you're trying to find that two-year-old speed, that golden slipper winner, essentially.
I'd love to buy a golden slipper winner. I rather doubt that will ever happen. I've not got the type of clients and the sort of money that's needed to do that, although I absolutely have so enjoyed this year watching Gary and Adrian gathering that amazing crop of two-year-olds and setting them loose and seeing what they've achieved. It's just been something to behold. And, you know, I know Bruce Slade has played an enormous part in that. And I have the height of admiration for Bruce. I think he's the most wonderful, wonderful bloodstock agent, and was really pleased that I was involved with him before he was famous, you know. When I come to Australia, to be honest, I know I haven't got the sort of budget that's going to buy me probably very famous horses, but it's just the sheer pleasure of working my way, starting at the Magic Million sale in January, working my way through New Zealand January Classic sale, you know, Melbourne sale, Perth, Adelaide, then back to the big Easter sale. It's I find the whole thing fascinating. I just follow styles and, you know, just all the relationships and how the market works, which is it's very different from up in the Northern Hemisphere.
But last year, for instance, Johnny, I know I was at the Adelaide sale with you, and your board might have even been grey from memory, but a Zoo Star filly, and he said, you know, you won't get a better type than, you know, the upcoming Easter sale. I have to buy it. You seem very type focused. Is that, am I correct in that assumption? Or
sometimes I haven't really. I did buy some nice horses in the Easter sale last year, but it's hard to get what you want there. So if I see a nice horse that I think is properly bred at one of the smaller sales and it's available, maybe a little cheaper because the market's not quite so strong in that sale, then that gives me a bit of pleasure trying that. At the end of the day, if you don't buy some good horses for your clients, they're not going to come back to you. So it keeps you on your toes the whole time. But I do enjoy having that sort of eye for the cheaper horse that might be a good one. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. Probably my absolutely very best buy in Australia was at Adelaide Sales about 7 or 8 years ago. I bought Archie Alexander, a filly by Testa Rossa, for $20,000, and she turned out to be called Shalo. And while she didn't win a Group 1, she was definitely Group 1 standard, and she won several group races and got Group 1 placing. So even at, you know, you can buy a good horse even at $20,000. It's possible. Doesn't happen too often, but it's possible.
What do you look for, or do you think you bring to the table that maybe some other agents or trainers and owners that go to the sales, that, especially with your knowledge of both hemispheres, is there something you think you bring to the table that maybe others don't?
To be honest, I really don't think, probably. I think we'd probably all get lucky every now and again. I do probably bring experience. That's possibly the most and the biggest attribute I might have, simply for longevity and the amount of time I've been looking at young stock. But other than that, I think, maybe it's just that gut feeling when a horse walks out and stands in front of you, and you have about 10 to 20 seconds to make a decision. Do you like it? And then it walks up and down in front of you, and it either reinforces or negates your opinion as to whether you like it. And then if you think you quite like it, you might ask for it to be walk up and down again. But you're probably talking a whole process of about a minute and a quarter, minute and a half max. And then you're going to base a decision on that. Not feeling as to whether it goes on your list and you pursue it and buy it for a serious amount of money. So it's a pretty peculiar thing if you look at it like that. You wouldn't go and buy a house after looking at it for 1 minute. You might be spending the same sort of money on a horse as you could buy a house. So maybe we're all mad, I don't know. But there we go. That's the way it's done.
It is not. It's an interesting lifestyle, particularly you working both hemispheres, and I'm sure you can't do it without the support of Susie. She's, you know, someone who knows her a little bit. She's a gem of a person. And as we know, she's had her battles, like for you two to stick together. Yeah. She must be tremendously supportive.
Yeah, no, she's been an absolute star. Poor old Susie's been struggling with a brain tumour for 15 years now. We're in a really good spot at the moment, thank God. We haven't had any trouble from it for about 3 years now. But Susie's a knowledgeable horsewoman in her own right, and she's got fairly strong opinions as to what she likes and doesn't like. And I can easily trust her to go off and look at a few batches of horses, and she comes back and tells which ones I should be concentrating on, which ones I should leave. Obviously, it's a physical thing. You do need help with these inspections when you're doing large catalogues of yearlings. And so to have someone you know, and you know whether they're very harsh or whether they're too easy. I've on many occasions had to ask other people to help us too. And, you know, some people work and some people it doesn't match your style of what the type of horse you like. With Susie, she and I look at things through the same lens. And she's always much nicer to the people as well than I am. She spends more time saying thank you and please and whatever. And I'm a grumpy old fool.
Might be coincidence, but we did see Susie out on the grounds at Classic, I think it was, more often than not. You must have been working the other side of the complex, I'm sure, Johnny.
I'm sure I wasn't at the bar, if that's what you're in.
No, I'm sure not. On that, when you were out here, you were at the sales in early 2020, and of course COVID hit, and you couldn't go home. What happened? Can you talk us through that?
Well, what happened was we were at the sales as usual, and we were due to fly back after doing the Premier sale in Sydney. I think I was going to then come back later on that year, so for the Easter sale. Anyway, COVID hit. We weren't allowed there. All the flights were cancelled. At the same time, poor old Susie had a turn with her brain tumour, giving her problems. So a combination of not being able to get a flight and needing medical help meant that we were stranded in Australia. And as it turned out, one of the luckiest things that ever happened to us, because first of all, Susie got the most amazing treatment through the medical system here, which probably would have been very difficult to achieve in England, considering the problems they had at the time. But secondly, it actually gave us a year where, despite the COVID restrictions and whatever, but we did manage to really get to meet some Aussie people much more properly, you know, like on a continuous basis, rather than just meeting them at a sale, shaking their hands and saying, see you next week. And we spent a lot of time in the Hunter Valley and on farms and whatever, and got a far greater insight into the way Aussies do things. And it really cemented our knowledge of the whole of the Australian racing industry in a far more deep sense, and was very clear. I do find now when I wander around the fails or the race courses or anything here, I kind of know as many people as I would do if I was wandering around the sales in Newmarket or Ireland. So it's a lovely feeling very much, you know, integrated into the system. Yeah, that's the way, you know, that's one of the reasons why we wouldn't miss it for the world.
I noticed on your website as well, you have three key words written on the homepage, and they are integrity, knowledge, and expertise. With those three words, what makes that so crucial to the work that you actually do?
Well, first of all, I'll say I haven't actually looked at my website in about 10 years, so I can't remember what it said. But if you're telling me it's integrity, knowledge, and expertise, I must have made that up somewhere along the line. I'm strongly of the belief that you've got to work very hard on behalf of your clients, and integrity is incredibly important to me. There should be no hidden areas. You shouldn't be hiding knowledge from someone that who is paying you, and you should be doing your 100% best on their behalf. And you charge a commission, and it's an honest charge. And in my case, it's generally speaking 5% commission, but sometimes a bit less, never generally speaking more. Knowledge, I suppose, is the fact that I'm steeped in the bloodstock business. I really have been doing it since I was a young kid. And expertise, I suppose, I've got a fairly long CV. I've worked for several trainers, several stud farms all over the world. I worked with two sales companies. And I've been practicing as a either company bloodstock agent or single bloodstock agent for 35 years. So yeah, I reckon I've got something to offer. I know that there are lots of other people who are very, very good at what they do too, so I'm not the only one.
I imagine one of your advantages, again, with your experience in both hemispheres, is sometimes these shuttle stallions that come out to Australia, and obviously Darley and Coolmore predominantly, that they're sort of out of sight, out of mind for the Aussie trainers and syndicators, but you've got that knowledge. And, you know, I know you bought weanlings by this stallion, Too Darn Hot, and then obviously stumped up and bought Too Darn Lizzie for $1 million as well, which at this stage looks like a good investment. You've obviously really had an opinion of Too Darn Hot, that he was a good chance of working down here.
I've always held that opinion of Too Darn Hot. I'm very good friends and with Simon Marsh and Warship Dan Studd. He manages so brilliantly on behalf of Andrew and Madeline Lloyd Webber. Simon knows that I spend a lot of time in Australia, so when the stallion started shuttling down here, he asked me to help and be involved and do what I could to to help make Aussies aware. But I actually didn't have to do a lot. I found most Aussies were very aware. Too Darn Lizzie did a very good trial win at Newcastle this morning, which she settled, which was something we were trying to teach her to do. But I'm pretty sure he's going to be a very good stallion in both hemispheres. I actually have very little doubt about that. All the signs are right. Believe and hope he'll come back to Australia again next season. And I hope he'll get a lovely book there. We will see how the story develops.
Can you recount the Tudun Lizzy story? I've sort of got a memories of that when you signed for $1 million.
And yeah.
You said,
yeah.
Can you tell us
all right, story? Well, it's a good story, so I'll tell you it. We picked Tudun Lizzy as the filly that was as a yearling. And unfortunately, of 12 or 15 yearlings in the Magic Millions catalogue, she was the very last one. So I sat out on all the other ones. Meanwhile, Simon Marsh had to fly off on his holiday, so I was there on my own. And he just said, buy her. And I said, yeah, well, have we got a limit? And he said, well, what would she make? And I said, well, 600, something like that. He said, oh, just get on, whatever, just buy her. Just don't leave her behind. So the McAvoy started bidding very strongly. And before I realized it, we were on $1 million. And then the hammer came down in my favor. And that was great. I'd never bought a yearling for $1 million before. But about just after I signed the ticket, I suddenly realized, oh my God, I told them it was going to make about 600. I've just spent $1 million. So I then had a terrible 3 hours where everyone was congratulating me. But in fact, I hadn't let anyone know because Andrew, Madeline, Lloyd Webber were in the Caribbean and were out of the, couldn't be got hold of. And Simon Marsh still hadn't landed in Vietnam where he was going for holidays. So. Luckily, all's well that ends well. He got a bit of a shock when I said $1 million, but he rang Madeline Lloyd Webber and she rang me back and said, well, with that extra $400,000 you spent, I guess we'll put that down to promoting the stallion. So I said, yeah, that's a good way to look at it, Madeline. Good way to look at it. So, yeah, hopefully she'll keep, hopefully she'll win a nice group race. I think she will on the evidence we've seen so far.
I imagine she's heading towards the Percy Sykes or something like that.
She is. I spoke to Adrian Bott about that today at the races, and he's thrilled. He feels that she's bang on target to have a big show in that race.
Johnny, another question without notice, but again, this podcast and a segment's proudly sponsored by one of your, I guess, agency peers, Jimmy Unwaller from Avesta Bloodstock, and I'd like to sort of usher this in for a share and success. Now, is there a horse that sticks out to you that sort of possibly you had a share in or it's changed your life or trajectory and where you are now?
Well, stick to the Southern Hemisphere because the Northern Hemisphere is a much longer story and my memory is not that good nowadays. But I was very, very lucky. I was coming in on a bus to Magic Millions in the early days and I sat beside a very good friend of mine who's Elaine Lawler, Legs Lawler. And she was telling me that she's going to put a syndicate together for ladies only. And that her great mate, James Bester, was going to buy the horse. And I said, well, why can't I buy the horse? And she said, oh, it's just really awkward, but I've promised James. So, yes. So I said, well, I'll take a share for Susie. And James went and bought the 60,000 on the Sunday of the Magic Sale, little filly by Star Witness, who turned out to be called Global Glamour. So, funnily enough, the very first share that the McKeever's ever owned in a racehorse racing in Australia was the dual Group 1 winning great race filly that was Global Glamour, trained by the great lady Gay Waterhouse. A lot of great ladies. No, that sticks in my mind. I wish I could do that again. That was pretty good.
I know we're pressing for time here, but I think you might have sold Star Spangled Banner to Hong Kong out of Lindsay that you sort of bought and Lindsay Park trained as well maybe last year or so. So it's not just a one-hit wonder.
I hope not. I've had the most amazing record with the Lindsay Park team. I must say, I think the world of those three brothers. They are absolute credit to their family and they are really good racehorse trainers in my opinion. I've been lucky enough to be involved in about purchases of about 7 or 8, maybe 9 yearlings that have come through the system. And according to Ben the other day, we've got 100% record. Yeah, we've done very, very well with them. So I hope I will. I bought them a filly in part in the racing manager Josh Ricks, who's a superstar. See, we bought a little Pride of Dubai filly for $90,000 at the Adelaide sale the other day. So let's hope that she can maintain the supposedly 100% record. They did indeed train a Star Spangled Banner to win first time out at Flemington. We sold him on for a very nice profit to Hong Kong. I'm very happy with my relationship with the Hayes brothers.
And Johnny, just to finish up, we just have a couple of quick fire questions, just a bit more of a get to know you type of segment called Fast Five. Sort of learn a little bit more about you outside of Bloodstock and racing. So, firstly, Johnny, do you have any hobbies as such outside of racing?
I love watching all sports, and I love traveling, and I love skiing. Those are my three main sort of things.
That ties into the next one. You've been to a lot of different places, Johnny. Where would you recommend to go for a holiday if someone was listening?
In Australia or
anywhere in the world? Anywhere in the world, Johnny.
I think Australia's got so many amazing destinations. I love going to Jervis Bay. We went there a few years back. I thought that was fantastic. Thought Noosa was fantastic. It's pretty hard to beat most of those Asian destinations if you want wonderful service and very nice weather. And Vietnam was great. Thailand's great. Bali and little parts of it that I've found are absolutely fantastic. Fiji, great. Yeah. Go to lots of bigger cities and things for racing things, but for rest and relaxation, those places are really good.
And obviously being able to do the sales tours around the world, but sticking to the Southern Hemisphere, have you got a restaurant recommendation that an audience member might be able to go to one day?
In Sydney, in Jersey Road, there is a very nice small Italian restaurant called I Macaroni, just around the corner from the Light Brigade pub on Oxford Street.
Who is harder to drink with, agents or journos, Johnny?
Journos are the hardest people in the world to drink with. They're in such top training that, you know, mere agents can't really keep up with those sort of people.
Yes, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you, Johnny.
And Johnny, just lastly, when you're kicking back on the couch on a Saturday night with popcorn in hand and Susie in the other, what Netflix show are you watching?
Oh, I really loved I was watching one called King of the Cross the other day, which I really loved, about the drug scene in the 60s on King's Cross. And that was fabulous. I'll watch anything really, but movies have to be good, otherwise I fall asleep halfway through. Probably because the third glass of red wine finally gets the better of me.
Johnny, we really appreciate you taking time out of your day, and I'm sure hopes the Easter sale is successful for you. I'm not sure when this goes out, but if it's after the sale, I'm sure you've bought two or three superstars. And look forward to seeing you next time.
Cheers, guys. Really love talking to you. As always, anything that I can talk about that shows my love of Australia absolutely goes down fine with me.